So you guys have already seen our talk and lecture from Peter earlier about the AngioVac system, basically just providing veno-veno pump access to extract the thrombus. In this case here, I'm gonna talk about briefly and show how we were able to actually convert and create a hybrid AngioVac circuit with an ECMO. In an event where if we had any problems, then we can provide ECMO oxygenation through via AngioVac circuit. Here's one of the cases we did. You have a large thrombi just bouncing around in the right atrium. And then here's another one, another case we also did where the thrombus was just jumping around in the right atrium, and you know that could be devastating, you know, if that were to get dislodged and go anywhere into the circulatory system. It could lead to immediate RV failure if it went into the RV. If any clots were to break off and went into the pulmonary system, you can develop a saddle PE, hypoxia, leading to anoxia. If it went into the circulatory system anywhere else, you could lose perfusion, blood perfusion anywhere, and reduce hemodynamics, and that could cause death. In rational, we have a case here where a 47-year-old man with a history of asthma and current tobacco abuse with 1 week worsening upper respiratory system was diagnosed with influenza and concomitant E. coli pneumonia. He developed worsening gas exchange and was placed on VV ECMO at a hospital on day 4. The patient became acutely hypotensive and acute signs of right ventricular strain on the electrocardiogram and a new troponin T elevation to 2.2 was also shown. An echo was demonstrated and a large, highly mobile thrombus extending from the ECMO cannula into the inferior vena cava and into the right atrium. And in this case, the patient had to get converted onto an ECMO circuit with the AngioVac system, with extracting from the right IJ and into the back into the femoral artery, and they were able to successfully get this clot out. And that's a picture of the being aspirated before the in the echo. With the thrombus before the AngioVac case and then post. Rational case two. In this particular case, this is an interesting case. They used a modified cardiopulmonary bypass circuit with a reservoir to suction out emboli with the AngioVac device. The AngioVac device was designed to suck the emboli with the extracorporeal circulatory support circuit. The reason they used a full reservoir was they wanted to have the availability in case they needed to go on full bypass because the patient was a high risk. So obviously in an event like this, depending on your program, most hospitals aren't all 3/8 tubing, so they had to make a few conversions to convert from 3/8 to 3/8 half connectors. And what we're looking at here, they actually created a bridge also from the access site into the IJ to the reinfusion site, and that just allows them to be able to prime and circulate the circuit pre and post bypass. So here in the picture, you have access from the IJ, and they created a Y which splits, and the Y, one Y, goes into the venous reservoir, which you, if you were to go on full CPB bypass, you would go that route. The other Y, but in the in a normal case without having to emergently go on bypass, you would, after you would prime the loop, you would clamp that off, and the Y, the other Y, allows you to go through via embolus trap for the AngioVac. And there's also another Y that they created, two Ys actually, where you're able to prime and use that that other line as a bridge in case if you did not want to use a trap and you just wanted to go on just regular support, or to in case you needed to change out the trap as well. And that delivers blood flow right back into the pump, bypassing the reservoir, where there's also an additional Y where you could clamp off, and that would just give you VV angio, AngioVac support. And in the event if you had to go, but this would only give you VV ECMO support, and if you wanted to go VA, then you would have to convert and add an additional cannula into the femoral artery. So this is a recent case we did, and the patient did very well. We were able to successfully get the thrombus out. It was in the right atrium, and it happened within a minute of going on. Sometimes it could be that fast, depending on the location of the thrombus. We did not have to go on ECMO bypass, so but we had it cut in. So in this picture, it's kind of hard to see, so I'll kind of show you a better illustration of what we did. So this is a more simplified non-CPB pump circuit. Basically, you have your access going into the IJ, and you would, where you see the clamp, that's just a bridge where we actually use to prime the circuit, and we would use that access route if we wanted to go on a bypass for ECMO support. So if you follow the blue arrows, it goes through the filter, through the top of the filter, distal towards the bottom, into the pump, through the pump, bypassing the oxygenator, where we also have two additional Ys that are clamped off using 3/8 Ys connector. And we would obviously have it primed and ready to go. And if you follow the arrows, that'll lead you right back into the femoral artery access site for a normal AngioVac VV circuitry. And here it is again. This is showing you where we actually, if we had to go on ECMO, VV ECMO, we have already clamped off the AngioVac site, and now we're going ECMO support. Actually, this is actually still allowing us to do VV ECMO, but still debris at the same time, simultaneously. So as you can see, we still have the clamp along the bridge distal to the bubble, the trap filter. Now, in the event if you wanted to bypass the filter and did not wanted to abandon the AngioVac procedure, or you are done and the patient became hemodynamically unstable and you needed to go on VA support, you would just clamp out the filter and clamp out the line that bypasses the oxygenator, opening your oxygenator line, and then convert to VA, obviously with an exchange cannula for at a VA at a femoral artery site. And it's very simple. It doesn't take but a few minutes to really set up and make your connections. The AngioVac circuit does not come with the connectors, but you would just need 3/8 Y connectors and possibly some additional tubing, depending if you need a length for the procedure, depending on where how you wanted to set it up. But very simple to use, very simple, safe, and at the end of the day, I think having it available and ready for high risk would save you a lot of trouble than having an additional ECMO circuit, you know, in the room taking up space, because you're already ready to go. Mm. And any questions?
Some really good. Thank God for the 3H3H3HY connector. Absolutely. We would be out of business if we didn't have that.
That's right.
That jewel, let me tell you. Very interesting. I like the fact that the forethought of the team was there to prepare for this eventuality instead of getting themselves into that problem and having to do something emergent. The fact that you had it all set up and ready to go, that with just you know, removing of a few clamps, you could put the patient on the ECMO circuit and everything. Very, very good. Should you have to also, good thing about it is, if you wanted to go via ECMO, as soon as you got a arterial cannula in, it's just another quick connection right into there if you had to, so it wouldn't take long to put them on VA if you decided that's what they needed in the quick post-op period. Great,
and a lot of times these patients, you know, we'll typically anticoagulate them, you know, as if, you know, it's an ECMO case or a bypass, you know, a small bypass case. So you could just get arterial access initially to begin with if you know if you think it's going to be a very high risk and you're thinking you might have to convert, then you can get the access, leave the cannula in, and do the procedure. And then if once you get the clot out, you could just pull the cannulas and, you know, close the groin.
Go from there. Yeah. And I could see that being with our surgeon that we work with, and I'm sure Dr. Montoya did this case, that he's so forward-thinking that he would have done that.
Right.
He's a very careful surgeon and thinks of all the possible scenarios that could develop and go from there.
Absolutely. You always want to be ahead of it and be prepared, because you never know with these cases. Both the few cases that I have done have been good, and I have not had to go on full ECMO support.
So you haven't had to utilize convert.
I have not had to utilize it yet.
That's great.
But, you know, I've had it on hand and ready. So, you know, it's just a matter of changing your clamps and turning your gases on and initiating bypass and ECMO bypass, and, you know, you have full support.
You've probably done the most of these cases, man, the AngioVac cases. Have you ever run into a situation where the filter is not big enough to handle all the clot?
You know, I have not. The cases I've done, we've only had to use one filter. And I remember earlier.
And that's a Terumo filter, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It is Terumo.
Terumo.
Yeah. I remember earlier talking in Peter's talk, he's had to use multiple filters, but those for like DVT cases.
Right.
So I guess maybe the thrombi might have been maybe not all intact, possibly, or maybe sometimes they were in different regions of the iliac or the femoral, or depending on where they were getting the, you know, IVC or SVC, depending on where they were snagging the clot from. But I've always been able to get away with just using one. I'm not exactly for sure how much volume that filter is, but I'd imagine it can hold a pretty big clot.
It's pretty good size, it seems.
The case we did, the clot that we pulled out was probably about 5 or 6 inches long, and it's amazing, you know, that someone could even walk around and survive, you know, for an amount of time with that, you know, in their right atrium.
Right.
Now,
right.
Is your experience with these only with a cardiovascular surgeon, or are you also have you done any with in a vascular situation?
They've all been cardiovascular. I have not done any vascular cases yet, but I would love and be interested to see one. It would be great to see one.
I'm just wondering, as far as staffing for the actual operation of the AngioVac pump portion, are they always staffing perfusionists even when it's not cardiovascular surgeons? That's kind of what I was interested.
I've done two AngioVac cases, and both times, the perfusionists were there. You know, we obviously know the pumps, and we know how important it is to when to turn it on, when to turn it off. And obviously, like I said in my earlier statements in the earlier talk, is once you have ensnared that clot, you do not want anything to come undone, or
you don't want to stop your flows.
You don't want to stop your flows because you lose that suction, and all of a sudden now you've had a clot that was fixed some way somewhere.
And now it's free.
Now it's free and free flowing.
Yeah. Right, absolutely. And you can imagine just the negative pressure that, you know, the pump creates, you know, when you suck that clot out. Imagine if you suck some of it and then it breaks apart.
Right.
You know, you don't want that.
Now you got a bunch of pumps.
But if you keep it going and if it breaks apart and you still got the pump going, the negative pressure is going to continue to vortex the clot into the cannula. Mm-hmm.
Right. I wished I would have remembered this question earlier to Pete, but I noticed there's always a section when on a pie chart that shows the other.
Yeah,
I'm
what is the other?
I'm always interested in what the other is, you know? And I'm wondering, do you, either of you know, has this ever been utilized to extract like a left atrial myxoma, or excuse me, a right atrial myxoma?
You know, I would imagine that it would be possible.
You know, there's always the myxomas, they've always got that little stem.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know whether or not
yeah, what would
it
happen
creates
with it.
How detrimental that would be.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in his lecture, he mentioned that they use them for endocarditis cases.
Right.
And, you know, pulling the...
Those are attached.
The masses,
usually.
They're attached.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, I was kind of curious, you know, how efficient and effective it is to be able to get, you know, all of the endocarditis off of it, and how do you know if there's not still any there?
Right.
You know.
Well, maybe somebody out in the audience has had experience with some of those other types of cases.
Right.
Are the phone lines open?
The phone lines are open, and we want to mention that if you would like to phone in and ask a question of the panelists, please do so. It should be on your screen, so please feel free to do that if you'd like. It's pretty interesting stuff. I tell you, the myxomas, one last comment about that. It's funny, most of the things we're pulling out tend to be clot, not so much in the way of tissue. Mm-hmm. So I just don't know whether or not the vacuum catheter, extraction catheter, is set to be able to actually withdraw more of a fibrinous situation other than a clot. It's a question.
And I wonder maybe they the way it's designed and the way the thrombus formation is, and I'm not an expert on this at all, but maybe possibly because the thrombus is, you know, basically just a clot formation.
Right.
Maybe the way it cleaves or breaks off from whatever it's attached to makes it easier to come off. Mm-hmm. Versus, you know, where it does not damage the tissue of the heart, because obviously, you know, I was kind of thinking about that too, like pulling an endocarditis off a valve leaflet.
Yeah, what kind
well,
of
you
damage?
Know, are you going to like damage the chordae? Or,
right.
You
know, mm-hmm. Right.
So, I mean, that would have been a good question for Pete.
Yeah, I wish I would have thought of it. Mm-hmm. I did not, but we can always reach him and
absolutely.
We can get that question answered
absolutely,
for us.
Absolutely. Well, and then they also use it for pacemaker.
Lead
removal,
extractions,
infections
right.
too.
Yeah,
right.
So that's just a whole nother, you know, category of like, you know, challenges, you know, that you may.
And
probably
it seems like that's a really growing field with
right.
those numbers that he said.
Right.
What was it? A million a year?
I think 1.4, if I remember my numbers.
Yeah, 1.4.
That's
right.
a lot of people with a lot of potentiality for these to develop clots and you know.
You hear about it all the time too. You know, like. I remember we've had a patient, I think, that we had to put on VA ECMO because they had some issues with the infective pacemaker lead, you know, case.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously they didn't use AngioVac mm-hmm. for that particular case. But
right.
the patient needed ECMO support post, you know, hemodynamic instability and
mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's interesting that, you know, the growing number of, you know, the challenges and needs for, you know, the uses for, you know, having AngioVac for those cases.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It'd be interesting if we ever see one or get to do one ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That'd be great. Okay.
Yeah, we're trying to get Peter on the phone, too.
Oh, are you? Okay, wonderful. We're going to try to get Pete back on the phone to ask him some of these other questions, and we'll go from there. Any last comments, suggestions? Anything about AngioVac that is... new and on the horizon as far, you know, I would like to see its application somehow eventually to work for small area arterial clots
mm-hmm.
somehow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
of course,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're reversing the flow when you do that because now you've got in an arterial tree, but it'd be, I bet you before too much longer, there'll be some type of instances that they're going to utilize it in to extract out arterial clot.
That'd be interesting.
That would be interesting.
I would like to see that if it ever develops. Okay.
Do you want to do your
deal? Yes. Oh, yeah. We shall. Okay. What we're going to do at the present time is we're going to have the show of the utilization of the actual AngioVac machine itself, and we're going to try our best to mimic what the surgeons and the cardiologists and interventional radiologists and anybody else is going to be doing these cases. And that's the interesting thing about it, as Pete said earlier, there's going to be a lot of people involved with this, depending upon their patient and who their primary physician
seems
is.
Seems like it'd be very widely used.
Right. Widely used by a lot of different disciplines. So we will move forward with that. Okay. Okay, man, it should be all in really good shape.
Go. Okay.
I'm just going to, you got everything down there.
Yeah.
I'm going to just start the pump.
This is in tight.
And just make sure everything is good and tight.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to start our demonstration now. We're going to utilize the bowl as the patient with its intravascular volume. We have a line that comes out, goes into negative force into our into our filter here. This is what's obviously going to trap the thrombus. And then we're going to pump it back in, and it's going to go, of course, the positive pressure side past the centrifugal head back into the patient to complete our circuit. So the first thing you want to do when you get to this situation is make sure, obviously, everything is primed. Communication is the key on this. We're dealing with a VV ECMO circuit, and utmost care and attention to the lines, because as you well know, an ECMO circuit is one of the easiest ways to entrain air and provide an air embolus, where we're trying to help the patient, not hurt them, so do no harm, correct? Okay, so what we're going to do, we've got everything primed and ready to go. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the clamps off here, off of our filter. We're going to turn the pump on at about 2 liters, and we're going to let that pump for a while. This is what the perfusionist can have ready and done. And great care and communication with the scrub tech up on the field. We've got some very good ones that we work with, and they're very knowledgeable about putting patients on ECMO, so they've got a good working knowledge of what line is what and what we need to do. We had a great crew about that. So what we're going to do, we're going to start it out. We're going to pump about 3 liters, and this is just to make sure that everything's working right, there's no air. I don't know if you can see in the top of this, but we have a little bit of air entrained in the top of the filter. That is required as we do this, as you can see right here, and that will provide area for expansion of the fluid as we withdraw our clot into the circuit. So when everything is ready to go, we've identified the clot, and we've got our extraction catheter in place. Then at that point, what the surgeon or the doctor of record will ask us to do is to turn our flows up to very high volume, a very high RPM, I mean, and we're going to make sure that as long as the clinician is going to be sucking out this clot, that we keep this pump running. The most important thing, failure to do so can create a free-floating embolus and thrombus from that which has been so far fixed to an object. And now we're going to take it off that object and keep it attached to our catheter. So now we will go ahead and show you how we pull the clot out. And we'll have two cameras. Men will utilize the one down the bottom to suck the clot into the camera. And then we'll see the thrombus being deposited up in our catch filter.
And as you can see how Mike increased the flows on the pump, that increased the negative vortex and pressure within the fluid. So you can see the blue clot here tethering, and it just sucked one clot in.
And
now it's and then here's another one.
As Excellent, excellent. That's exactly the way the cases are done. They tend to be almost that fast. Of course, it all depends on how much clot you have in there. But that was a two-tiered clot that we had. So now we will turn our suction, our pump flow off. We'll clamp our lines. And now we can see at the top of the clot we were able to extract from the patient, depending upon what it is. And that, in a nutshell, is how the AngioVac works.
And in the event if this wasn't your basic AngioVac circuit setup and you had an oxygenator ECMO/ECMO sliced in, we would have a bridge going from this line, the access site from the IJ, to the distal tubing part of the trap, which would have a bridge where you could actually clamp off your lines and open the bridge, allowing you to flow from straight from the patient through the centrifugal head. And beyond here, you could just wire in oxygenator, your ECMO oxygenated membrane, and then you could just go on ECMO and clamp off. So that's how simple it could be. But this is just your standard AngioVac setup.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Mike.
Excellent.